Good evening, I'm Chris Barrow, and it's 6:30, so it's time for Opera on Three as we cross over to New York for the next in this season of Operas from the Met.
We are live at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. I'm Mary Jo Heath, and for today's Saturday matinee, it is a thrill to bring you Verdi's Louisa Miller. Soprano Sonia Yontcheva sings the title role, the young woman caught in a web of forbidden love, family devotion, and political intrigue. She stars opposite tenor Piotr Bocciaua as her beloved Rodolfo, and the one and only Placido Domingo as her father. Maestro Bertrand de Billy conducts. We're sharing this performance with audiences in movie theaters around the globe who are watching it live in HD. During intermission, HD host Anthony Roth Costanza will speak with our stars backstage, and we'll bring you the opera quiz. Stay with us.
We're looking forward to it, and we'll be rejoining New York in a moment after their short advertising break. The Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. Now it's time to go back to New York for the introduction to Act One of Verdi's Louisa Miller.
I'm Mary Jo Heath, and commentator Ira Siff is with me. It's been a dozen years since the Met last presented Louisa Miller, and Ira, the audience response has been tremendous. People have felt a real sense of discovery, and they've been expressing their appreciation to the artist at the end of the night in such a visceral way.
Well, you know, I think it's been a wonderful discovery for the artists, too, since all three stars are new to their roles.
Yes, Sonia Yontcheva, Piotr Bocciaua, and Placido Domingo have all made role debuts with this run.
Although Domingo's not new to this opera, he was an acclaimed Rodolfo in the past. You know, Louisa Miller has a bit of a cult status among opera fans, in spite of, or maybe because of, the fact that it's hard to label or pigeonhole.
Well, Verdi wrote it in 1849 at the tail end of his early so-called galley years, and that was shortly before he wrote his big three, Rigoletto, Il Trovatore, and La Traviata.
Right, so people view Louisa Miller as a bridge between periods, and I'd say it has the best of both. It's got the energy and the drive of the earlier works, but the intimacy and attention to character detail that you find in the later ones. It zeroes in on the character's personal reactions within the kind of exciting theatrical situations that Verdi just loved.
He worked with the librettist Salvatore Camerano, famous for bel canto librettos like Lucia di Lammermoor, which we heard last week. Louisa Miller is based on a play by Friedrich Schiller, Kabbalah und Liebe, or Intrigue and Love.
Verdi adored the works of Schiller. He even kept them by his bedside. Over the course of his career, he drew on no fewer than 5 different Schiller plays for his operas.
Schiller, like Verdi, often explored the struggle between personal freedom and monolithic forces like religion or politics. In Kabbalah und Liebe, that force is represented by a nobleman with absolute power.
But in Louisa Miller, Verdi focuses more on the father-daughter relationship, as he often did. You know, there's also a very complex and ambivalent father-son relationship.
Right. Well, let me give the synopsis for the first act. It's subtitled L'amore, or Love. There are 3 scenes in this act with pauses in between. The first scene takes place outside the home of Miller, a retired soldier, and his daughter, Louisa. It's her birthday, and villagers serenade her. Louisa is in love with a young man, Carlo, and she's overjoyed when he arrives. But Miller is worried because this Carlo is new to the village, and they know little about him. After everyone leaves for church, except for our gang here, Miller is confronted by Wurm, who is the steward to the powerful Count Walter. Wurm demands Louisa's hand in marriage. And when Miller refuses, saying he will let her marry a man she loves, Wurm spitefully reveals that Carlo is not who he says he is. His real name is Rodolfo, and he's the son of the Count. Miller believes this news confirms his fears that his daughter has fallen victim to a seducer. The next scene takes place at the Count's castle. Wurm has informed the Count that Rodolfo is in love with a commoner, Louisa. When Rodolfo enters, the Count orders him to marry the wealthy and powerful Duchess Federica. It's all been arranged, but once she arrives and Rodolfo's alone with her, he begs her to understand that he's in love with someone else. Federica, who's been infatuated with him since childhood, is furious and will not release him from their engagement. In the final scene of this act, Miller tells Louisa the truth about the identity of the man she loves and how he's about to wed a duchess. But Rodolfo rushes in and swears he truly loves Louisa and will marry her. His plan is to blackmail his father with a dark secret from his past. The Count then arrives, determined to tear his son away from the village girl. He basically calls Louisa a whore. When Rodolfo and Miller rush to defend her honor, the Count has Louisa and her father arrested. Miller forbids Louisa to kneel before the Count since she's innocent. Privately, Rodolfo threatens his father. He knows how the Count came to power, and he's ready to reveal that terrible secret to everyone. At this, the Count orders that Louisa be released. It's a very intense and suspenseful ending to the act. So, Ira, let's go back and talk about the music in the first scene. It opens with such an optimistic sort of a mood.
Yeah, the villagers have a gentle chorus as they bid Louisa to awaken to this beautiful day. Louisa's entrance aria is full of staccatos and trills, and they express her breathless excitement as she describes falling in love at first sight.
The aria is interrupted by the arrival of Carlo, that is, Rodolfo, and they start off with a buoyant love duet.
The melody is ecstatic, and Louisa and Rodolfo each sing a verse, but even as the happy chorus continues underneath them, Miller privately expresses his fears for his daughter in these jagged interjections.
It's in the scene between Miller and Vorm that things really take a dark turn. Vorm clearly feels entitled to claim Louisa's hand in marriage.
Miller's love for his daughter and his nobility of character come through in his great aria here. He tells Vorm, "I'm not a tyrant, I'm a father."
Yes, he says, "Children's hearts are not to be commanded." Vorm almost seems to enjoy puncturing Miller's idealism. He's very blunt as he tells him that Louisa's humble suitor is actually an aristocrat.
And Miller's cabaletta expresses his rage, and we'll hear it in short notes that he sings on the word sospetto, suspicion. He now believes he was right to doubt this young man.
As I mentioned, there's going to be a brief pause after the first scene, and we will talk about the music for scene two at that point. Well, we are about to hear the famous Sinfonia.
Yeah, it's one of Verdi's most unusual overtures. Instead of unfolding as a collection of tunes that will be heard in the opera, it's built powerfully on one theme, like the movement of a symphony. This theme will not appear again until Act Three, and then it'll be associated with Louisa.
You know, the overture, you say, like a symphony, it does sound a little sonata allegro form, if I can borrow
that
term.
That's exactly right.
It takes these tunes and kind of develops them in a very different way rather than just laying them out one after another. And the overture is often excerpted for concerts. As you mentioned, it has that wonderful early Verdi energy. Another sonata allegro form sort of thing.
Exactly. And you know, the predominance of marvelous solos and filigree for the clarinet here and elsewhere in the opera is probably because Verdi was aware that the first clarinetist of the opera orchestra in Naples, where the opera premiered, was a virtuoso.
In this scene, we'll hear in order of vocal appearance Placido Domingo as Miller and Sonia Yontcheva as Louisa. Riab Shaeb is Louisa's friend Laura. Pyotr Pachawa is Rodolfo, and Dmitri Beloselski is Vorm. Our concertmaster today is David Chan, and Bertrand de Billy conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus. Well, this production is set in the Victorian era. The curtain goes up on a courtyard with Louisa's home to the left. Against the pale blue-gray sky of early morning, we can see the tops of other buildings in the village. To the right, an archway leads in from the street with stairs and a terrace above, and that's where Louisa's friends are going to arrive to sing to her. And Louisa looks radiant. Well, it's her birthday. She should look radiant when she greets them. She's wearing a rose-colored gown, her hair falling in long brown curls. And there's a church on the right, and you can see three little church windows, kind of stained glass sort of things on the right hand of the stage with light coming through them. Well, I think HD host Anthony Roth Costanza is just finishing up his intro for the HD broadcast here. And here comes Maestro Bertrand de Billy into the pit. Here's Maestro de Billy shaking hands with David Chan. Let's hear the overture and then Act 1, Scene 1 of Verdi's Luisa Miller.
Thank you. No, no.
Miller is is now convinced that the Count's son has been pursuing Luisa with dishonorable intentions. That was the opening scene of Verdi's Luisa Miller live from the Metropolitan Opera. We heard Sonia Yoncheva, Pyotr Bochowa, Placido Domingo, and Dmitri Belosselsky. The second scene will begin in just a couple of minutes. And here we meet Rodolfo's father, Count Walter. He may be a villain, but he believes that everything he's doing is for the sake of his son.
Walter's aria, traveling between minor and major keys, conveys his ambivalence. In minor, he expresses his guilt over a mysterious crime that brought him into power and his justification that he did all this for his son's future. Then the music turns to major as he laments that paternal love brings him only torment instead of happiness.
He's made all the arrangements for an advantageous marriage for Rodolfo. The Duchess Federica is his kinswoman, and she's treated to a grand welcome. She begins her duet with Rodolfo tenderly as they reminisce about their childhood, but he is uneasy as she talks about first love.
And as the message becomes clearer that Rodolfo's heart belongs to someone else, the music turns darker.
He thinks he's being honorable, releasing her from the prospect of a loveless marriage, but she doesn't view it that way.
They share a vigorous melody. Rodolfo declares he would sooner kill himself than betray Luisa. Federica answers, "Do not expect mercy from a jealous heart."
In order of vocal appearance, we'll hear Alexander Vinogradov making his network broadcast debut as Count Walter, Dmitri Belosselsky as Wurm, Pyotr Bochowa as Rodolfo, and Alessia Petrova as the Duchess Federica. Bertrand de Billy conducts. Well, this scene is set in the Count's castle. It's an imposing, austere place with walls of dark stone and dark wood. A long staircase leads into the room with five windows above it, admitting only dim light. The only warmth comes from a fire in the fireplace, and in front of it is a plain table and some chairs. Well, Ira, Verdi's father-daughter relationships have been discussed a lot, but he did create quite a few complex father-son relationships in his operas,
yes,
too.
Yes, often with the son disappointing his father's expectations. You know, Count Walter feels to me a little like a forerunner to Philip II in Don Carlo.
Though with more love for his son.
Indeed.
Now, Federica would seem to fit the bill of the jealous mezzo role. At first, she seems sympathetic, but then before long, we will see that she's not quite so. Let's get back and hear Act 1, Scene 2.
Che me narrasti e la ragione dunque smarrì, signore, quel esaltato capo voi conoscete. La duchessa intanto mi segue, dille che io la bravo. Tutto m'arride, tu mio figlio, tu soltanto. Non sai quanto mi costi, oh, mai non le sappia, mai.
Oh, implora l'onor di favellarti. Io la bandita caccia intanto affretterò. Moristi.
Re che ha fatto d'altro amore trafiggerlo a piedi, a piedi tuoi sopra.
Forma se vuoi la mappa, no, in sé mi scolbra, no, mudrò il potere in fatto, no, te
Duchess Federica is outraged to learn that Rodolfo, whom she considers her rightful fiancé, is in love with another woman. That was Act 1, Scene 2 of Verdi's Louisa Miller, live from the Metropolitan Opera. We heard Olesya Petrova, Pyotr Bochawa, Alexander Vinogradov, and Dmitry Belaselsky. And the third and final scene of the act will begin shortly.
In this scene, Verdi keeps things moving at the brisk pace he favored in his earlier operas. No sooner does Louisa learn from her father about Rodolfo's true identity than Rodolfo himself arrives to protest that his love is sincere.
And very soon after that, the Count appears with his men to stop his son and insult Louisa, and the villagers all gather in time to witness the scene.
So we have the makings of a really great Verdi concertato ensemble. Miller launches it. He insists to Louisa that she, an innocent woman, must kneel only before God and never before an arrogant man like the Count.
Yeah, we hear Rodolfo pleading with his father, the Count accusing his son of being disloyal, Louisa begging for God's help.
As her voice soars up in this beautiful prayer, but instead of the traditional rapid stretta ending, the ensemble closes with a heroic climax for the tenor. Rodolfo's music escalates in intensity as he tries different ways to force his father to yield, and in the end he only succeeds by threatening, as a last resort, to reveal the Count's dark secret.
In this final scene of Act One, we'll hear, in order of vocal appearance, Sonia Yontova as Louisa and Placido Domingo as her father, Miller. Pyotr Bochawa is Rodolfo, and Alexander Vinogradov is his father, Count Walter. Riab Shaeb is Louisa's friend, Laura, and Bertrand de Billy is conducting. Well, the scene is set back in the courtyard in front of Louisa's home. The first thing we'll hear is hunting music in the distance.
His horn calls and an offstage chorus. Louisa knows that Rodolfo's among the hunters, and he's planning to leave the hunt to come see her.
There is a big choral presence in this opera in general. They play different parts, but a lot of the time they're the villagers.
It's clear from them how well loved Louisa and her father are in this community. Of course, villagers are moved to tears by her suffering when the Count has her arrested.
As you say, Ira, it was unusual not to end the act with a fast and furious ensemble to follow up the concertato. We heard that more conventional structure last week, for instance, with the stretta following the very famous sextet in Donizetti's Lucia di Lammermoor.
Yes, Verdi himself insisted to the librettist Camerano that there be no stretta.
Amazing about that. Mm. Let's go back and hear Act One, Scene Three.
Thank you. s'avanza. Ed esso, mio padre,
lo son perduto.
Ieri stesso.
Oh,
Rodolfo has rescued Luisa by blackmailing his own father, Count the Count. That was Act One of Verdi's Luisa Miller, live from the Metropolitan Opera, starring Sonia Yontcheva, Pyotr Bachawa, Placido Domingo, Alexander Vinogradov, and Dmitry Belaselsky, conducted by Bertrand de Billy. And in just a moment, we're going to go join our HD host, Anthony Roth Costanza. He's going to be chatting with our Luisa, Sonia Yoncheva. They're showing the stage there. It looks like she's sort of waiting there in the middle, and they're all going to come to her. Meantime, the props guys are taking off the tables and the buckets and the wagon wheels, all the things that were adding a little bit of local color to this little courtyard outside of Luisa's home that was the scene for the first act. And looks like they're about to swing around, and we're going to just find our soloists and our interviewers together.
Oh my God, it's always hard. No, every noon I'm like, why, how, but... Sonia, hi. Thank you so much. That is amazing. It's such thrilling singing. So
thank you.
This is a new role for you.
But yes.
It seems to fit like a glove. Tell us, why is it such a good role for you?
Well, I'm happy that this is the feeling.
It totally is. Trust me.
It's a very, very, very difficult and demanding role because, yeah. You know, Luisa has to show her youth and her also strength. Now in the second act, it's about to come. And then in the third act, to rejoin again this light, light voice because she's going to God.
Totally. And you were talking about the strength. I mean, there's so much adversity she faces, and it's a strong character. Mm. Is that who you are, or is that like you have to summon strength for this?
I think I'm all of it. I'm more, strong woman in my life, but in the same time, I like to be, you know, also a little bit, tiny, tiny little bit, girl. I need protection.
I feel that way sometimes, too.
Yeah.
So, earlier in this HD season, the audiences loved you in Tosca and in La Bohème. So, what's it been like going from Puccini now to Verdi?
Oh yeah, that was really challenging because, you know, it's completely another thing, another world, another epoch, and another person, another character.
Absolutely.
So for me, being Tosca in the same season and 2 months later being Luisa was a huge challenge and a huge test, and I'm glad it went well.
I think you're passing it with flying colors. So vocally, is it a change? Is it different from Puccini to Verdi, or does it feel similar?
Oh yeah, completely. For me, Verdi is uomo di teatro. He's a man of the theater, and Puccini is a man of the cinema.
Yeah, totally. So when
so it changed.
Yeah, and when you're choosing these roles, do you like cinema or theater, or you like to go between one or the other?
I like both because, you know, if you compare Shakespeare and the huge incredible films we have today in our epoch, I cannot know what I love more. Mm. It's beautiful in both ways.
Absolutely. So okay, I want to ask you a secret.
Yes, tell me.
What's your favorite moment in the act coming up?
In the second act, oh, I love the scene with Worm. But I should say I love also the quartetto because it's a very, very unusual moment. And it's completely a cappella, no music with us. We're singing with our voices. And it feels really like suspended in the air.
Oh, it's like a bell in this house. I can't wait to hear it. Sonia,
yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. You're amazing.
Thank you. I would like to say hello to my family in Bulgaria and to my friends in Mexico. Hi.
Hi.
And also in France. In Italy, all of you that you're following us, thank you.
She had a lot of people to say hi to. That was our HD host, Anthony Roth Costanza, speaking with Sonia Yoncheva, who's singing the title role in this performance of Luisa Miller.
You know, it reminds me, of course, of Violetta in Traviata, another role that Sonia specializes in that begins with coloratura, evolves to making a powerful sacrifice, demanding powerful dramatic singing, and then a lyric final act.
Yeah, really. Like Traviata.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Mary Jo Heath, commentator Ira Siff is here with me. And coming up in this intermission, our final opera quiz of the season. That's the Toll Brothers Metropolitan Opera Quiz, which will begin in just a few minutes.
And we'll rejoin New York shortly after the Met have an advertising break. Act 2 of Luisa Miller is due to start in about 20 minutes.
I'm feeling a little nervous.
Nervous.
Slightly nervous.
Some of Britain's most talented teenagers.
Oh, I'm feeling really excited.
I'm really excited.
I think my grandmother is very excited. She's probably more excited about it than me, actually.
A battle for the coveted title of BBC Young Musician.
I never thought that I would make it to this stage, so I feel really lucky to be here.
To win would be lovely, like the cherry on the cake.
Our coverage continues with the Woodwind category finalists every weekday afternoon at 4:30 on Radio 3, starting on Monday. And catch up with the competition so far on BBC iPlayer Radio.
In a moment, it's the Met quiz, and as you may have picked up from previous seasons, the questions for the quiz are entirely supplied by listeners from all over the world. If you'd like to submit a question for future broadcast, the address to write to is Metropolitan Opera Quiz, Metropolitan Opera, 30 Lincoln Center Plaza, New York, New York, 10023, in the United States of America. And please do remember to mention that you hear the broadcasts on BBC Radio 3. You can also submit questions online at the Radio 3 website, and while you're there, have a browse through the Opera on 3 pages. The schedule of this season's remaining Met broadcast is there, along with details of Radio 3's live and recorded broadcasts from British opera houses. From there, you can also find links to the Met's own website, where there are further details about the operas, including synopses and casting information. So do head on over there. And now let's return to the Met for a short feature on Verdi's Luisa Miller.
Verdi's Luisa Miller premiered in Naples on December the 8th, 1849, a tumultuous time on both sides of the Atlantic. Old regimes clamped down in the wake of bloody revolutions that had swept through Europe for 2 years. Slovaks fighting Hungarian rule were the last to lay down arms, but the Austrian Empire continued to dominate both sides. After supporting a failed revolt in Dresden, Richard Wagner fled to Zurich to publish revolutionary essays about art. Wagner's Artwork of the Future would be a synthesis of music, poetry, and dance, and lay the spiritual foundation for a renewed society. In St. Petersburg, Fyodor Dostoevsky was on death row, not for writing revolutionary texts, just for reading them. Facing a firing squad, he received a last-minute pardon. The mock execution was his punishment, plus exile to Siberia. All this gave him plenty of grist for future novels. In Maryland, Harriet Tubman escaped from slavery a second time. She had run away with her brothers weeks before, but returned when they had doubts. This time, she traveled alone, staying at safe houses on the Underground Railroad. It was a route she'd come to know well. Henry David Thoreau fiercely opposed slavery and the United States' recent war in Mexico. He urged like-minded citizens to withhold support of the government and follow their conscience above the law. His essay, Civil Disobedience, eventually inspired such figures as Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. These are some things happening in a troubled world when Luisa Miller premiered in 1849. We're live at the Metropolitan Opera with Verdi's Luisa Miller. It's the first intermission, and it's time for the opera quiz. Our panelists today are Brad Cresswell, program director and host at WGTE in Toledo, Roger Pines, dramaturg for Lyric Opera of Chicago, and Melanie Spector, college student and former Met Children's Chorus member. And now I'm going to turn you over to today's host, pianist and artistic director of Juilliard Vocal Arts, Brian Zeger. Everybody ready down there to have some fun? Let's go to Liszt Hall.
Thanks, Mary Jo. Hello to our audience in Liszt Hall, to all our listeners, and to some representatives from Toll Brothers who've joined us today. These broadcasts that we love would not be possible without the support of Toll Brothers, so welcome, and also a shout out over the radio waves to Bob Toll. Thank you to all of you. Panelists, in the next act of today's opera, we're going to hear a dastardly duet between two basses, Count Walter and Wurm. In a couple of weeks, we'll get a love duet between two mezzos in Massenet's Cendrillon. Is this unusual? And what are some other memorable duets you can name that are for voices of more or less the same register? Brad Cresswell.
I'm going to start with way back in Monteverdi. There's a great scene in the Coronation of Poppea where Nero, when he's sung by a tenor, has a duet with another character who's a tenor, and they get increasingly drunk during the course of that duet. Now, that's not the reason that I chose it, but it's great music.
Okay. Melanie.
Can I talk about a trio, or would that be... Sure. I do love the beginning of Don Giovanni, because how often is it that you have three basses singing together? That's so cool. I love that.
Yes, Roger.
Well, Mira O Norma and Si Fino Allori and the first duet, in Norma for Norma and Adalgisa. Those were originally both soprano roles. I mean, Adalgisa became a mezzo role much later. So I love hearing Norma sung by two sopranos.
That's right. I also might mention the Grand Inquisitor duet of Don Carlo. And I'm why do you think composers are attracted to that? Is it the difference of sameness, or is it the sameness of sameness? What does a composer get out of that?
I think there are a lot of different reasons. It depends on the composer.
Yeah.
It could be the character that suits that particular range, and dramatically they're brought together for a duet. Mm-hmm. It could be because the composer was having fun, exercising their craft, and they thought this would be great. Three basses, what could be better?
Yeah, exactly, right. Good, let's move on to our music ID. This round was inspired by Amir Satvat of Washington, D.C. He submitted a question in honor of his friend, the late Kitty Webb Harris, a lifelong opera lover and supporter of the Met. They were interested in Verdi's use of the organ, which they point out was an instrument he first played as a child. They researched operas in which Verdi features the organ. For instance, in the next act of Louisa Miller, we're going to hear this music coming from the church in which Rodolfo is supposed to marry Federica. Dimitri Dover, an alumnus of the Met's Lindemann Young Artist Development Program, is at the Yamaha to play four other examples. Panelists, you tell us the Verdi opera and the situation. Dimitri, our first example, please. Thank you, Melanie. I see a tentative hand.
Don Carlo?
No.
Is it Aida?
No.
Stifelio, possibly?
Yes, Roger. Yes, well done. Stifelio, Act 3, when Lena enters the church. Very good. Okay, our second example, please, Dimitri. Had Roger's hand at about beat 1.5, I think.
Yeah. That's Trovatore Act 3. Leonora and Manrico are about to be married.
Very good. Excellent. Number 3, please, Dimitri. That's tricky. A tentative hand from Roger. You want to give it a try?
It's not Forza del Destino, is it?
No. It's an earlier Verdi opera, which had a production at the Met here quite a few years ago, featuring Pavarotti.
Oh.
Yes?
Lombardi.
Yes, it's Lombardi, Act 1. That was tricky. Last example, please, Dimitri. We had a couple of hands. Melanie was first.
That is La Forza del Destino, when Leonora is in the convent.
Very good. We had a hand from Brad. Also, you want to add anything about this?
That was La Forza del Destino.
Yes.
Bravo, Brad.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. Thank you. Thanks to Mr. Satvat for submitting that question in honor of his friend Kitty Webb Harris, and also to Dimitri Dover of the Met music staff for his beautiful playing. Now comes our presto round. Thursday was the Met premiere of Cendrillon. It's Massenet's operatic version of the Cinderella story. And yes, Joyce DiDonato does lose a glass slipper. In honor of that famous item, let's do a presto round featuring things people drop in operas. Get ready with your bells. I'll name an object. You tell me which operatic character drops or loses it. Tell me who drops a handkerchief. That was tough. I think Roger was first.
It's Sophie at the end of Rosencavalier.
Okay, how about another handkerchief?
Fazzoletto and Otello.
Very good. Yeah, okay.
Who drops it, though?
Who drops it, Brad? You want to fill in?
No, I'm asking, who drops it?
Well, it gets passed around, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, it's a difficult question to answer.
Yes. It becomes an item of true interest, yes.
It's dropped many times.
Okay, a fan, un ventaglio. Roger?
In Tosca, the Marchesa Davanti.
Yes, and Angelotti is the, yes. And that's Tosca by Puccini, yes. Another fan, this is a little trickier. A piece recently in the Met repertoire, an operetta, actually. Yes, Melanie?
Merry Widow?
Yes. Valenciennes, Merry Widow by Lehar.
By Lehar.
Very good, yes. A bracelet in a Verismo opera. It belongs to the heroine's jealous rival. Yes.
Is that Adriana Lecouvreur?
Yes, very good. By
Chilea.
Very good. They're getting a little easier now for a little bit here. A wedding ring. Melody?
Pélléas et Mélisande.
Very good. Debussy?
By Debussy.
Thank you. A figurine of the Christ child. In a 20th century opera, Roger?
Poulenc, Dialogues of the Carmelites.
Very good. Who does the dropping?
Blanche.
Very good. By Poulenc, yes. A mantle or a shawl, which is dropped in a kind of play within the play. A 20th century opera. It's a comic moment.
These are easy.
anyone in the audience? A comic moment, play within a play, a Britain opera. It's Tisby or flute in Britain's Midsummer Night's Dream. Yes. A letter which gets dropped accidentally on purpose from a balcony. Yes, Roger?
That's Rosina and Barbara Seville.
Very good. And finally, this is truly not such a hard one, a pin. A pin, yes?
That's Third Act Marriage of Figaro, Mozart.
Very good. Barbarina, it does the dropping. And the winner of today's Presto Round is Roger Pines. Well done. Now, we're approaching the end of our last opera quiz of the season, but there are still 4 weeks of performances remaining. That got us thinking about tragic endings and survivor's guilt. For instance, sorry for the spoiler, at the end of today's opera, Count Walter will have to live with the fact that he has caused his own son's death. Panelists, what are some other operas that leave you thinking about the remorse that survivors might suffer? Any thoughts?
You mean survivors, yes. Like characters in the opera, not the audience.
The characters who survive, who may, for some reason, carry some survivor's guilt. Yeah, Melanie.
I had a bit of a cynical thought after seeing Parsifal this season that, you know, Amfortas is left, his wound is cured and everything, but he's caused all this havoc. You know, Kundry has to die because her curse has been lifted, and, you know, it's been 40 years, and the Knights of the Grail were starving for such a long time, and there he is. All healthy and recovered, and I mean, come on. I sat there for 6 hours. Okay, all right, okay. I've said my piece.
Okay, very good. Roger.
I think about Amneris and Aida.
Yes.
What must she be going through when, you know, the two of them are dead, and what's she going to do with herself? I mean, she's just going to carry a torch for Radames for the rest of her life, probably, and be miserable.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned a Britain opera earlier. What about Ellen Orford? After Peter Grimes goes off and drowns himself. I mean, obviously, she tried and tried to help him, and she was left after that. And the stigma, I think, that she has to bear with the borough after that.
It's hard to imagine her living on, really, in the borough after that. Yeah. Melanie? Sure.
I think Rigoletto probably also feels some guilt.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
After, I mean, you keep your daughter locked up practically in her room her entire life, and then you let her get out once, and she's thrown in a bag into the river. I'd feel pretty bad about myself. Yeah. That's just me.
Yes. I think Pinkerton might certainly be an example.
Oh,
I mean, he expresses that remorse in the last notes of the opera. Any other?
Yes. The princess aunt in Suor Angelica.
Mm-hmm.
How could she live with herself?
Mm-hmm.
I should think she would be just, you know, appalled by what happens to Angelica.
She had a strong faith, if that would help her. Yeah. And what about sort of the opposite, when operas in which people die and yet there are kind of officially happy endings? I think of something like The Death of Giovanni. I mean, to what extent is he mourned? How does the community survive that
or
loss?
Or Leporello, huh?
Yeah. Well, he says he's going to go off and find another employer, right, in the epilogue. Yeah.
Well, Natalie. I just saw last night my college, Manhattan School of Music, where I am a voice student, the undergraduates are putting on Rimsky-Korsakov's The Snow Maiden in English. Mm-hmm. And the plot is pretty insipid, where the snow maiden just comes out of nature, wherever she came from, and she breaks up a bunch of marriages because people are in love with her, and then she ends up melting at the end. Sorry if anyone's going to see it this weekend. But then everyone just ends the opera in this big chorus praising the god of sun, and everyone's fine. Just the lover she had tricked kills himself, and then everyone who wasn't affected by her just praises the sun, and that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, Brad.
Well, I was going to say, if you want to talk survivor's guilt, what about poor Spoletta in Tosca? I mean, you know.
He's the only one left alive.
He's the only one left holding the bag at the end. And you know, it didn't work out.
Yes. And what about the ring cycle? There's so many folks left behind who've been sort of part of this whole web of evil, but...
Well, Gutruna is still around at the end, but not too many others. Well, Hagen gets pulled under the water, so she's really the only one left.
Yeah.
I think Rana survives.
Oh, Rana.
The horse. She dies on the fire, no?
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah. Depends on the production.
Okay. Yeah. And how about endings where characters seem happy to die and really want to get out of this world? I would think of someone like Suor Angelica, for instance, who seems at the end to feel that she's being reunited with her lost son.
Well, we just mentioned one with Brunhilde riding into the flames at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other ideas along those lines? I mean, in fact, Roger, you mentioned the tomb scene in Aida. In fact, it's kind of the only way out for them, isn't it?
Because they can't live with each other, without each other, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, they're happy to
There's
go.
There's a Liebestod.
Yes. Those chimes tell us that it's time to return to Louisa Miller. Before I return you to Mary Jo and Ira in the radio booth, I'd like to thank a few people, our ushers in List Hall, especially Sandra Harris on the chimes, and our panelists, Brad Cresswell, Roger Pines, and Melanie Spector.
Thank you, Brian. That was Brian Zeger with the Opera Quiz down in List Hall. Yes, it's always nice to say thank you to our trusty ushers. It's the same group that's down there for us week after week. They've become our pals over the years. I'm Mary Jo Heath. Commentator Ira Siff is here with me, and Act 2 of Verdi's Louisa Miller will begin soon. To recap a little from the first act, Louisa is in love with Rodolfo, son of Count Walter. The Count is trying to force Rodolfo to marry Federica, a duchess. He's threatened to imprison Louisa and her father. The second act of the opera is subtitled L'Intrigo, Intrigue. It also unfolds in three scenes. Here's the synopsis for the first. In Miller's home, villagers bring Louisa terrible news. Her father has been arrested by the Count and dragged away in chains. The Count's henchman, Vorm, who wants Louisa for himself, comes to coerce her. He demands that she write a letter claiming that she was only toying with Rodolfo because of his status and stating that she's actually in love with Vorm. If she refuses to do this, her father will be executed. Louisa lashes out at Vorm but sees no choice but to give in. He also makes her swear that she will tell no one about this. So let's talk about the music in this scene, Ira. As with the previous act, we begin with a chorus, only this time they're distraught.
Yes, the chorus is in unison here, which adds to the sense of urgency, and the fear that Vorm instills is clear in the way they cry out his name when he arrives.
Yes, Vorm is truly worthy of his name. By forcing Louisa to write that letter, he gets her for himself, and he pleases his boss, the Count.
As Vorm dictates the letter, we hear this insistent ostinato, a repeated musical figure in the orchestra, and there's a haunting tune on the clarinet that listeners may recognize. It's similar to one Verdi used later in La Traviata in another emotionally wrenching letter-writing scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we come to the focal point of this scene, Luisa's powerful double aria. It begins as a passionate plea to God. Tu punisci mi, o Signore. Punish me if I have offended you, Lord, but do not abandon me to the fury of the barbarians.
And with this aria, Luisa is elevated from ingenue to heroine. It's a grand sweeping piece in a major key that conveys a real sense of martyrdom, but it dips into minor as she considers the dishonor she faces.
Wurm also demands that Luisa reassure Federica that she's not her rival. And in Luisa's Cabaletta, she accuses him of tearing her heart to shreds.
Yes, this Cabaletta opens in minor key, but switches to major as Luisa insists that her father be returned to her swiftly so that he may close her eyes when she's died. It's one of Verdi's most exciting and moving Cabalettas, with soaring high phrases, plunging low notes, but a sense of pleading underneath.
There's going to be a pause after this first scene, and we're going to talk about the rest of the act then. Well, Luisa Miller premiered at the Teatro San Carlo in Naples, where Verdi's Alzira had premiered a few years earlier.
In fact, it was at the time of Alzira that Verdi signed a contract with them for another opera, and he spent the next 3 years trying to get out of that contract because he felt that the censors in Naples made it impossible to set interesting subjects. Also, he didn't have what he felt was a really particularly cordial working situation at that theater.
But the San Carlo held Verdi to his contract, and they used rather underhanded means, well, not unlike the villains in this very opera.
Yes, Salvatore Camarano was the theater's resident librettist, and when Verdi attempted to pull out of the contract, they threatened to have Camarano imprisoned for failing to supply a libretto.
Yikes.
Imprisoned. The desperate poet, who had a wife and kids, turned to the composer, who relented.
Verdi had been living in Paris at the time with his mistress, Giuseppina Straponi, but he moved back to Busseto to write the opera. Well, Verdi had good cause to be wary of those censors. It was a turbulent time in Italian history, with regions struggling to free themselves from Austrian occupation. And Verdi was drawn to operatic subjects that allowed him to build in messages of support of Italian independence and unification.
Yes, in fact, for Naples, he wanted to set The Siege of Florence, and this was a novel that glorified its hero as one of the great martyrs of Italian liberation. It even vilified the emperor and the pope, so it's not surprising it was forbidden. As an alternative, Camarano suggested Verdi look again at Schiller's Cabale und Liebe, which he had considered before.
Well, he'd already written two other operas inspired by Schiller, Giovanna d'Arco, mm-hmm. Joan of Arc, and Immagini d'ieri. Luisa Miller does paint an unflattering portrait of the aristocracy, but not in a way that caused the censors to intervene. Now, we don't know much about how the critics reacted to the opera's premiere, but it was well received by audiences in general.
Yeah, but interestingly, the third act, which is usually now acknowledged as the finest in the opera, was received somewhat coolly by the public back then.
Right, and as we can see, it was kind of way ahead of its time.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, before Luisa Miller, Verdi had written 13 or 14 operas, depending on whether you count Jerusalem, the French version of I Lombardi, as a separate one. Some of those are things that we're familiar with, like Nabucco, Ernani, and Macbeth. Others were very rarely seen, like La Battaglia di Legnano, an opera which came right before Luisa Miller. In Act Two, we're going to hear Act Two, Scene One, rather, we're going to hear in order of vocal appearance Sonia Yontcheva as Luisa, Riab Shaeb as Laura, and Dmitri Belaselsky as Wurm. Bertrand de Billy conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and chorus. Well, this scene is set in a large room in Luisa's home, and it almost resembles an inn. There are a few long tables, and there's a long balcony stretching along the wall. It looks like a place where people gather, where they're very welcomed. There's discussion that maybe she was a teacher and school children came here. Her father is a pillar of the community.
Yes, a former soldier and very honored in the community.
And you can imagine this is a place where people liked to gather during the time. Now, we are watching the end of an interview with Anthony Roth Costanza talking to Placido Domingo. And guess what? We're going to time delay that one for you so you can hear that that interview during our radio second intermission. And I think we're awaiting now the arrival of, there he is, Maestro Dubilly. Entering the orchestra pit. Asking the orchestra to rise. Giving him a little round of applause himself, shaking hands with David Chan. Let's hear Act 2, Scene 1 of Verdi's Luisa Miller.
Rodolfo, non amai. braccio era di noto e volli stringerlo fra mie reti.
Egregio!
Dei salvar tuo padre. Ambizion mi vinse, tutto svanì, perdona, ritorno al primo affetto, e di Rodolfo ad evitar gli sdegni, come la notte regni, vieni ed insieme fuggirem.
Lo disti,
sul corpo del padre spontaneo lo spirito. Luisa mi giura che lo morirai.
Lo giuro.
Un soggetto al cor che prescrivi.
Io dono.
Al castello venirne dovrai. E di nel boschetto di nobi signora la cesa lo stanchi di form
di te
acerba è la prova
no
duolmi
e allora
allora
Luisa's devotion to her father to force her to renounce the man she loves. That was Act Two, Scene One of Verdi's Luisa Miller, live from the Metropolitan Opera. And we're about to hear Scenes Two and Three now, performed without a pause. We'll hear, in order of vocal appearance, Alexander Vinogradov as Count Walter, Dmitri Belosevsky as Vorm, Alessia Petrova as the Duchess Federica, and Sonia Yontcheva as Luisa. Pyotr Bachawa is Rodolfo, and Patrick Miller sings the role of a peasant. Bertrand de Billy conducts. So, Ira, let's talk through the synopsis and the music. In scene two, Vorm reports to the Count on the success of their scheme. And in a chilling duet for the two basses, we finally learn the Count's secret. In order to gain power, he and Vorm murdered the former Count.
And the sense of conspiracy is heightened by the way these two low voices continue one another's train of thought.
Yes, they relive their crime. Then the Duchess Federica arrives, followed by Luisa as arranged by Vorm, and Luisa is forced to tell the Duchess that she's in love with Vorm, not Rodolfo. Now, there's an extraordinary passage here, an a cappella quartet for these characters that Sonia Yontcheva mentioned during her interview. They all have such different motivations.
That's a tour de force. The emotions are extremely exposed by the absence of the orchestra. The vocal lines intertwine as the piece changes tonality, and Luisa's line soars above the others, expressing her grief.
Yeah, it's one of those suspended in time kind of moments. In the third scene, Rodolfo is given Luisa's letter. he struggles to come to grips with what he reads, that all of their former joy was a lie. And this is his celebrated, unforgettable aria, Quando le sere al placido.
He can't help but remembering his happy moments with Luisa, and the sublime beauty of the melody matches his reminiscences. But each of the two verses ends with a deeply moving phrase, A mi tradia, she has betrayed me.
He's still reeling from this when Vorm approaches. Rodolfo challenges him to a duel, but Vorm fires his pistol into the air and escapes. The Count, feigning sympathy, urges his son to forget Luisa and marry Federica.
And Rodolfo's beside himself with despair. In his cabaletta, he says, the altar, the grave, it makes no difference. Without Luisa, even heaven would be hell for him.
Well, these two scenes are set back in the Count's castle. And as I mentioned, the opera is based on Schiller's play Kabbalah und Liebe, or Intrigue and Love. Well, this act is called Intrigue, where Act One was called Love.
Yes, many of Verdi's earlier operas had titles for their acts. We see it in operas like Hernani and Il Trovatore. This is certainly a complicated web of intrigue that Luisa and Rodolfo are caught in. Walter and Vorm are ruthless. Vorm, by the way, is named just that in the Schiller play as well. And yes, it does mean worm in German.
Of course it does. Vorm and the Count even set it up so that Rodolfo believes he has intercepted the letter, the one that we know Luisa was forced to write.
Yes, a peasant gives it to him, claiming that Luisa's asked him to deliver it to Vorm. The peasant says he's giving it to Rodolfo because he suspects a scheme.
One of the sneakiest things the Count does after he knows that Rodolfo has read that letter, he plays dumb and he says, I'm sorry I was so harsh. You can marry the woman you love after all. And that way he gets credit for having yielded. Well, let's go back and hear the rest of Act Two of Luisa Miller.
Thank you. Potrebbe attestarlo.
Ella stessa.
Ella.
Qual
tu chiedesti qui fu condotta.
Oh. abbinerai. Mi giovil ancor, secreta e viva prece, am giunte mi feruita, onde recarlo a voi.
E che ritor la mia presenza.
Mi ripete più volte, sospetto incerto di non so qual trama, e speme di mercede a voi m'han tratto.
Esci! Olà! Furim! Agli occhi miei. Se cielo e terra, se mortali ed angeli attestarmi volesse che la non è rea, mentite, io risponder dovrei. Tutti mentite. Son cifre sue. Tanta perfidia, un'alma si nera, si mendace. Bella colomba il padre. Dunque i giuri, le speranze, la gioia, le lacrime, l'affanno, tutte menzogne tra di me.
suono angelico, amo te solo di cielo.
Alfa, te amo, abandono.
Rodolfo, devastated by what he believes to be Luisa's betrayal, agrees to the marriage his father has arranged for him. That was Act Two of Verdi's Luisa Miller, starring Sonia Yontjeva, Pyotr Bochowa, Olesya Petrova, Alexander Vinogradov, and Dmitry Belosselsky. Bertrand de Billy is conducting in this live broadcast from the Metropolitan Opera.
You know, it's so interesting. In the first scene in that act, it's the absence of the orchestra and that amazing a cappella quartet that causes the excitement. And then in the second scene, the woodwind and string accompaniment to the gorgeous aria Quando la Seria Placido supplies, the orchestra supplies goosebumps.
Verdi was a man of many talents with a large palette to draw from right here at this point in his career, wasn't he, as he was finding his own voice.
Yeah.
I'm Mary Jo Heath. Commentator Ira Siff is here. Coming up in this intermission, we're going to hear that interview that HD host Anthony Roth Costanza had with Placido Domingo in the first intermission. And then later on, we'll hear him speak live with Pyotr Bochowa. We'll also hear from mezzo-soprano Alice Coote, who's starring as Prince Charming in our Met premiere production of Massenet's Cinderella opera, Cendrillon. And after intermission, of course, the third and final act of Luisa Miller. Don't go away.
And we'll be back with Mary Jo Heath in a few moments after the Met has a short advertising break. Act 3 of Luisa Miller begins in about 20 minutes.
Spring into your morning with Essential Classics.
This is a portrait of April as it was for John Foulds, long before beasts from the East had been invented.
The brightest and best classical music.
A prelude, two sonatas and 11 dances, all crammed into just 8 minutes.
And this week, the cultural inspirations of Lucy Worsley.
We had to translate bits of this biography of King Alfred, the
Why?
Most obscure book in history, perhaps.
Essential Classics, with Susie Klein and Ian Skelly. Weekday mornings from 9 on BBC Radio 3.
And a very good evening to you. I'm Chris Barrow. Don't forget to tune in on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock for our opera matinee. Marlis Peterson stars as the ill-fated Mary Queen of Scots in Donizetti's Maria Stuarda. Later, at 10:15, it's Here and Now, featuring performances from an event called Eavesdropping that took place in the eaves of Oxford House in Bethnal Green in East London. It was curated by the soprano Juliet Fraser and discusses female creativity and the future of women in new music. There are also performances from Ryoko Akamara, Freya Johnson-Ross and Chrissy Sterling. Then at midnight, it's Geoffrey Smith's Jazz, which focuses on April frolics and light-hearted jazz, from Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller to Anthony Braxton and Bobby McFerrin. It also promises jazz that's downright outrageous, so don't miss it. Anyway, now it's time to return to the Met in New York.
And now we bring you a golden moment from Met history. We're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the birth of the magnificent Swedish-American diva Astrid Varnai. She made her Met debut in a most remarkable way. At the age of 23, she stepped in at the last minute to sing Sieglinde in Wagner's Die Walküre. Then, 6 days later, stepped in as Brunhilde in the same opera. Here's a bit of Varnai in another Wagner opera, singing Zenta's ballad from The Flying Dutchman in a Met broadcast from 1950.
Das Schiff ist fern, auf Tod
Astrid Varnai in Zenta's ballad from Wagner's Der Fliegende Holländer, conducted by Fritz Reiner, one of the many historic performances you can hear at Met Opera On Demand. Varnai's extraordinary Met career encompassed both soprano and mezzo roles from 1941 to 1979. We've been listening to A Golden Moment from the Met. We're live at the Met with Verdi's Louisa Miller, and it's the second intermission now. Well, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, while we were having the opera quiz, HD host Anthony Roth Costanza spoke with Placido Domingo, who's singing the role of Miller.
Yes, Miller was gone in Act Two, but he'll be back in Act Three. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry. Well, let's hear that interview now.
Maestro, it's so great to see you. Thank you for being here.
It's great to see you, Anthony.
Thank you. Well, 40 years ago, you were singing Rodolfo in this production. Did you ever imagine that you would someday do the father?
Well, I cannot imagine, first of all, that I will be singing after 40 years. But I am still singing, and yes, I have moved from my repertoire of tenor, doing bariton parts, you know, and I enjoy it very much. So I'm very thrilled. I'm very happy that I can do it.
It's astonishing to all of us. And next year, we get to celebrate your 50th anniversary in this house. I mean, that is a total feat of longevity and of nature, and it's unparalleled in operatic history. What's your secret? How do you do it?
Well, I don't know. They ask me the same, and I always say it, I think it's the passion. Mm. Music has given me always, from the very beginning, the strength. I mean, my parents, they were singers, no of opera, but zarzuela. And I see them working, and the stage for me is my life, you know. I get all the energy, and even though right now I don't know how long I will be singing, you know. I mean, I still have contracts for the next 2 years, 3 years, but I just don't know if I will.
I think it's going to be a long time. You have that zarzuela sort of duende inside of you. I feel it. So, but you've sung here 18 Verdi roles at the Met, which is kind of mind-boggling. Is this one different? What makes it special, Miller?
Well, Miller is one of the... It's an important opera because it comes after Battaglia di Legnano, just before Stifelio, and after the Stifelio come the three, you know, the three popular ones, you know, so Trovatore, Rigoletto, and Traviata, whatever the other, they come. So it is a passage, then after it comes another Verdi. But also in Louisa Miller, strange enough, we hear a lot of bel canto.
Uh-huh.
You know, you hear a lot of Donizetti.
Interesting.
You know, in the Louisa Miller. So it is Verdi still no totally convinced. He has only one big concertato and chorus, but doesn't have the, you know, what he has done in Nabucco, what he has done in Attila, what he has done in Macbeth, you know, all those big, big choral works. But I think the piece is wonderful. It's a surprise for people that don't know
totally
the opera, yes.
And one thing which grabbed me about your performance is this father-daughter relationship. Verdi seems to do that a lot, but this one touches me a lot. Talk to me about that.
So Verdi, unfortunately, he lost his children and his wife when they were very little.
Mm.
And I think that that was really a... How can you live through that, you know, the heart broken completely? And I think he put it in his music. You know, we hear it in Rigoletto, we hear it in Boccanegra, we hear it here, also to the son, you know, in Vespri Siciliani, in Due Foscari. So it's a lot of the love of father and children. So he is at his best.
Absolutely. Placido, thank you so much. It's great to see you.
Anthony, I'm very proud that you have been one of the winners of Operalia, okay?
Well, thanks to you. Okay, thanks, Maestro.
Thank you.
That was HD host Anthony Roth Costanza speaking with Placido Domingo in our first intermission today. You know, he mentioned Operalia. That's Placido's beloved competition, and there are lots of people that sing here that were winners of that.
Yes, including countertenors like Anthony.
That's right.
And, you know, of course, they were together in the Enchanted Island.
They were.
That's why they know each other.
Very exciting. Well, as we heard our panelists and hosts say during the quiz, Massenet's Cendrillon opened here two nights ago.
The Met premiere of this wonderful Cinderella opera. It's such a treat.
The audience was enchanted. Well, it stars mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato in the title role and mezzo-soprano Alice Coote as Prince Charming. I got to speak with Alice Coote lately. She's won raves in this opera and production in other cities. And she told me that it's a particularly rich retelling of this classic fairy tale.
This Prince Charming in this show is really a rounded character, and you see his vulnerability a lot. It's a beautiful opera in the way that you see Cinderella's real darkness and vulnerability, and you also see my darkness and vulnerability before I meet the love of my life. And he's rather adorable. He starts off in his pyjamas, really, really depressed, and then he grows throughout the show. He's a lovely, lovely person, I think.
How do you take this guy who is a fairy tale character and make him more real?
Well, I don't do that. The composer does it. He writes this incredibly heartfelt music. Then, of course, Laurent Pelly, who's created this incredible production, which is actually, of course, it's the most exquisite thing you can look at. The lighting, the sets, the costumes are unbelievable. And I just defy anybody not to just grin from ear to ear, from curtain up to curtain down. But within that, he's also, there's never a single moment where there's a cliche. It's a storybook, and it looks like a storybook, and it's magical. But within that, he draws incredibly real characters, and he allows me to be incredibly morose or bad-tempered if I want to be. I'm not swanning around just being a cardboard cutout. We are real characters, but that's inspired by the music, which is the most incredible score of moment-to-moment real drawn human beings going through real moments with the most exquisite melodies, and it's just the most balanced thing. You think you've just got a moment of excitement just to the point of boiling, and then it goes to the next melody and the next scene and the next scene. And my face really does hurt at the end of rehearsals from listening to this music, from just the joy of it.
You have two duets, the one at the ball, of course, where you first meet this mystery woman.
Oh, these duets, yes. Oh, these wonderful duets. So, I mean, we just sort of get quite beside ourselves at how beautiful they are while we're singing them. Because, I mean, when do you ever hear two mezzo-sopranos, a love duet between the two of them, two completely different voices, of the same voice type, but our voices are very different and they're written very differently. And you hear them independently singing these incredible heartfelt or true passages, each true for their character, but eventually we're on the same pitch, we're singing the same pitches, and we join, mm-hmm. and we have to try and match our voices to each other. But that's something uniquely exciting, I think, if you hear people go higher and higher and they're on the same note and they eventually reach the same pitch, the same voice. That's something very unusual and very magic.
That was mezzo-soprano Alice Coote, who's singing the trouser role of Prince Charming, Le Prince Charmant, in Massenet's Cendrillon, starring alongside Joyce DiDonato, Kathleen Kim, Stephanie Blythe, and Laurent Nauri, conducted by Bertrand de Billy. Cendrillon will be our broadcast 2 weeks from today on April the 28th, when it will also be shown in movie theaters live in HD.
And we'll rejoin New York in a couple of minutes, which just gives me time to tell you about the Opera on Three broadcast next Saturday. It's a world premiere of Mark Anthony Turnage's opera, Coraline, based on Neil Gaiman's fantasy novella. It features the soprano Mary Bevan in the title role, and we're going to hear a short feature now with the composer and Mary chatting about the work, starting with Mark Anthony as he explains how he came up with the idea.
I think that when you're looking for an operatic subject, you're looking to see if you can believe that people are singing on that stage. And as soon as I read Coraline, I thought, yeah, that I can see those characters singing.
Coraline is an 11-year-old girl who's just moved house with her parents. She's an only child. I think she's at a funny stage in her life, that moment between being a child and being an adult or a teenager. I think she's struggling a bit with her own personality and whether she's going to be happy, you go lucky child, or just really cross all the time. I think the main thing about playing this young age is that I react to everything on the spot. When you're playing an 11-year-old, they just react to things as they occur. And actually, that makes it quite easy, because then in opera, in this particular opera, I'm just thinking on the spot.
What I try to do with the other world that Coraline goes into is to make it slightly sickly, slightly more sort of heightened. I tend to make the music sort of slightly more creepy. Coraline goes through a real journey. So she realises at the end that the sickliness of her other mother, she really wanted the reality of a real mum, and it was much more comforting in the end. I was very attracted to Coraline as a person as well, in the sense that she's a strong girl. Especially having a 7-year-old daughter myself, the idea of these sort of role models, and that she was a girl that really just confronts all the demons.
So sorry, other mother, no offence.
Mark Anthony ending our feature on Coraline. And we also heard the soprano Mary Bevan, who plays Coraline. The mezzo-soprano Kitty Waitley plays the mother and other mother. The baritone Alexander Robin Baker is the father and other father. Miss Spink is played by the soprano Gillian Keith. Miss Forcible is Frances McCafferty. Mr Bobo is played by Harry Nicol. And Dominic Sedgwick plays a ghost child. That's with the Britain Sinfonia, conducted by Sian Edwards, next Saturday on April the 21st at 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3. And now it's time to rejoin New York.
Hi, Mary Jo Heath, and commentator Ira Siff is here with me. We're coming up on the last act of Louisa Miller. This act is subtitled Il Veleno, The Poison. It has only one scene, and it takes place back in Louisa's home. So, Ira, let's talk through what happens.
Well, we sense the darkness of this act right away. In the orchestra, there's the ominous theme from the overture, along with a sad reprise of the Act One love duet.
And again, we begin with the chorus. This time, it's Louisa's friends who are alarmed by the frail state she's in, and they attempt to cheer her up. Louisa's only consolation is that her father has been released from prison. Miller returns home, but he too is distraught by Louisa's condition. And then he reads a letter she's just written to Rodolfo, revealing the treachery that tore them apart, which she can confess now because she's planning to kill herself.
As Miller reads this suicide note, the overture theme returns as if representing an inescapable fate. And we come to one of those infinitely moving Verdi father-daughter duets. And it begins with a gentle melody for Louisa, with delicate staccatos expressing transcendence and resignation.
Miller pleads with her not to leave him. He would rather join her in the grave than be left alone. And finally, Louisa, realizing what her death would do to her father, tears up the letter.
And the music feels celebratory for the moment. Father and daughter share an optimistic melody as they decide to leave all of this behind them and start a new life, even if it means wandering as beggars.
They will begin their journey at dawn, and Miller leaves to get some rest. In the distance, Louisa hears an organ from the church where Rodolfo is to marry Federica. But while Louisa is kneeling in prayer, Rodolfo arrives and secretly pours poison into a cup. He then confronts her and gives her one last chance to deny that she betrayed him. When she won't, he asks her to bring him the cup.
In this dialogue, the orchestra expresses what the two of them will not, as Rodolfo drinks from the cup, then gives it to Louisa to drink. The duet proper begins with her meltingly lovely melody. She urges him to release his tears as a balm to his heart.
But she won't tell him the truth. And then he reveals that they have both taken poison. In the shadow of death, Louisa feels free to tell the story, that Vorm forced her hand by threatening to kill her father. Rodolfo is overcome with remorse, but Louisa is at peace. And Miller returns to find the lovers near death.
Louisa begins the final trio, her vocal line accompanied by celestial string arpeggios and harp.
She asks for her father's blessing, while Rodolfo begs for his forgiveness. Moments after she dies, Count Walter and Vorm rush in, and with his last remaining bit of strength, Rodolfo stabs Vorm.
And tells his father that his punishment is to witness the death of his own son.
Yes, the opera ends with the two fathers, Miller and Walter, left to their grief, just standing over the bodies of their children. Now, in just a moment, we're going to go join HD host Anthony Roth Costanza once again. He's going to be chatting with Piotr Bocsawa, our Rodolfo. Now, Ira, earlier we were talking about Verdi's early period, all the other operas that came just before Louisa Miller, because it's sort of right at the end of that first period.
Yes, there was a very perceptive critic and scholar at the time, Abram Bazevi, who always called it a bridge opera, you know, a middle, the beginning, he thought, of Verdi's real middle period, mm-hmm. not Rigoletto, as was often right. considered.
Yeah, because it's a shift from one kind of drama to another. Big story, little story.
Exactly.
Well, let's go backstage. I think we're ready to hear from our two right now.
I'm joined now by our Rodolfo, tenor Piotr Bocsawa. Piotr, hi, and wow, that was amazing.
That was a wow moment, yes.
That was a wow. The audience went wild. I mean, that had to feel good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's it's a really something special, you know, when you have this kind of response from the public.
And it's an intense role. You've talked yes. about how it goes almost from bel canto to late yes. Verdi. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the development of the role is really dramatic. You mm. know, it starts in a kind of Donizetti style almost, mm. and then we go further into the opera. Is going more dramatic and more dramatic. And we are now expecting a really Otello moment. And
wow.
it's really also musically and vocally very, very different.
It's difficult too. I mean, it
oh,
sounds
yeah.
easy to you, but what's the hardest
yeah.
part of it?
That's my job, to show the people how easy it could be. But the drama is there, you know. You have to find amazing intensity in this kind of roles. And, you know, it's pure Verdi. You know? He tried to find some situations for his later operas, you know, even like you know, from Otello.
Absolutely. And in shaping the role, have you worked with conductor Bertrand de Billy in terms of making
oh,
it
yeah.
musically?
Oh, yeah. It's my third role debut in the season after Adriana, Carmen, and Rodolfo in Luisa Miller. But no, we got really enough time to prepare it well because we got a couple of weeks rehearsals and I know Bertrand very well. We have a fantastic cast. And, you know,
it's amazing. But do you, when you're doing this, as you're going, do you think about pacing yourself, saying, go easy here, give more here? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually not.
No?
No, because I know what I can and what I can't.
And, that's amazing. So you have it in
yeah,
your body.
Yeah, yeah, you have to play. On the stage, you don't have to think about technique or save some voice or whatever. No, no, no. You have to really play what you have to play.
Fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Ah. So Placido has sung this role.
Yeah.
Did he give you advice?
Yeah, we talk a little bit about that, you know. It's really funny because, you know, I know he has a lot of experience
yeah.
With this role and with Verdi in particular. And we talk a lot about moments and, you know, some interpretations and really
that's,
nice.
That's so fun. But, you know, Placido has also expanded his role farther and farther from
yeah.
tenor into... Do you ever think you could do something
oh,
like that?
I don't think so. You know, I have another plan, you know. But I appreciate it very much, you know.
Yeah.
This kind of unique experience with his, you know, whole repertoire is really something very special.
It's kind of amazing. So
yeah.
without giving the plot away for Act 3, what would you say is what you're looking forward to doing most?
It's really difficult because this act, at the end of the opera, is completely new for me too,
mm.
from the kind of emotions. Because I never did Otello. We spoke with Placido. He told me, you know, it's like Otello. But I'm sorry, I never sang Otello.
Right.
It's not that easy for me.
Yeah.
But it's really this direction. And you have to just play another person.
Yeah.
Bertrand told me, you have to start this, the last scene, like nobody will recognize who is the guy, also vocally. You have to change the voice a little bit, you know, settle down and make it darker.
Wow, well, we'll be listening for all these new colors and character changes. I'm so excited for Act 3. Piotr,
thank you
so much.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
And toy, toy, toy.
Thank you very much.
That was Piotr Bocsawa, our Rodolfo today, talking with HD host Anthony Roth Costanza. In Act 3, we will hear in order of vocal appearance Riab Shaeb as Laura, Sonia Yoncheva as Louisa, and Placido Domingo as Miller. Piotr Bocsawa is Rodolfo, and Alexander Vinogradov is Count Walter. Vorm is Dmitry Belaselsky, who appears but doesn't sing in this act. Actually, he just sort of shows up to get killed, doesn't he, Ira?
Yes.
Bertrand de Billy will be conducting the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus in this performance, coming to you live from the stage of the Met. And here comes Maestro de Billy on the podium now, giving his orchestra a little round of applause, shaking hands with David Chan. Let's hear the third and final act of Verdi's Louisa Miller.
pallida me sta sei.
No, padre mio, tranquillo io sono.
Pei genitore, oh, quanto caro lo scampo te costava. Io tutto d'amor m'apprezzi.
Tutto!
Al lavor tuo per me rinunciasti.
Ma in terra
quella calma funesta, il cor mi sella, non so qual rio presagio. Che foglie questo? Tradimento te disgiunse or Rodolfo un giuramento più dir mi donie a chi dimora in cui l'inganno può te muover o sanza alcuna di vita aspetto come mi mettano più grai la squilla. Vieni sotto al mio pie il suo facilla. Contro te stessa e le fuggi la tromba per voi.
soldato col crin più bianca le dà più greco l'amore che un padre ha seminato nei suoi tardi anni raccoglier te e da festarmi cruce esse di pianto e di dolore nella tomba che fiorire vuoi mia prima scendere il tenito
Ma sempre padre
la figlia sua sarà
la figlia sua sarà
quella fina
Oh!
sappia il padre mio che presso il rito io qui l'attendo.
Yeah.
And Rodolfo have died of poison, leaving their fathers overwhelmed with grief. That was the conclusion of Verdi's Louisa Miller, coming to you live from the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House here in New York City. And Ira, at the end of that opera, I can't help thinking of Romeo and Juliet with the two youngsters dead and their fathers standing like, what just happened?
The most powerful thing I think you can see on stage, and of course with Verdi's music, all the more powerful.
And now the curtain is pulled back. These are our curtain calls from times past that happened in front of the Golden Curtain at the Metropolitan Opera. And our cast is on stage. Walter, Alexander Vinogradov, Laura Ryabshaev, Pyotr Bachalwa as Rodolfo, Sonia Yonchova as Louisa, Placido Domingo as Miller, Olesya Petrova as Federica, and Dmitry Veliselsky as Vorm. And Sonia is leaning over first to Domingo and then to Bachalwa. Nice hug between, amongst the three of them, I should say, with her in the middle. And now our cast is applauding the orchestra. And now they're going to step forward one more time all together. Deep bow from all of them. We've said this whole production is kind of dark and brown, and the costumes are indeed gray and white and browns, rich but dark colors. Now we're going to have some bows out in front.
The mood of the...
There's Ryabshaev, Canadian mezzo, born in Tunisia. Our Laura, she's a member of our Lindemann Young Artist Development Program here. Here is Dmitry Veliselsky. Vorm. Oh, he gets a few boos.
Yes,
that's kind of nice, actually.
Hissing the villain.
Yeah. based from the Ukraine. This is his fifth Met role. He'll be back for four more next season, actually. Samson and Delilah in Aides, Ramphis, etc. Here's Alessia Petrova, mezzo-soprano from St. Petersburg. Oh, there are flowers flying up. All right. She looks very surprised. She was Antonia's mother in Hoffman last fall. She'll be back next season as Amneris in Aida. She sings a lot at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg. Next out is Alexander Vinogradov, Count Walter. This is his Met debut season and role. He sings a lot at La Scala and in Paris, Washington, Berlin, Dresden. And he's going to be back next season as Escamillo in Carmen. And pretty soon he's going to be Raimondo for us in the chip. Well, that applause greets the one and only Placido Domingo, as do a bouquet or two of flowers flying up on the stage. 1968, he made his debut. That makes this the 50th anniversary of his debut. And the entire audience is on their feet. He's always so humble the way he takes his bows, Ira. He just sort of holds his hands out in front of him and takes a nice bow, waves goodbye. He's going to stick around and conduct Romeo and Juliet for us in the next couple weeks. And here's Piotr Boczała, Polish tenor. His 11th role at the Met. Flowers for him as well. He'll be back next season to sing Maurizio in Adriana Lecouvreur with Anna Netrebko in the title role. He's heading off to sing Werther in Zurich next. If you're up by Tanglewood, he'll be Rodolfo in Bohème there this summer. Big wave from him to the audience. And here's Sonia Yancheva. Oh, she's like, whoa, a big roar. Oh, flowers flying up for her as well. Bulgarian soprano, this has been a big season. She's been here basically since before Christmas rehearsing and sang Tosca. She sang Mimi in La Boheme. And now Louisa Miller.
Three HD transmissions.
Yep. Right? And she'll be here next season to sing Desdemona in Otello. And Iolanta, the title role in that Tchaikovsky opera. And she's waving and blowing kisses at the orchestra and the audience. And now here comes our maestro, Bertrand de Billy, French conductor, his eighth opera at the Met. He's a busy guy these days. He's conducting Louisa Miller and Cendrillon, and he'll lead Tosca in a couple of weeks when it returns for an end-of-season run. And the National Mets National Council Finals concert on the 29th of April. He's leading that, too. And he'll be back next season for Puccini's Il Critico. And now the whole cast is out on stage again. Taking a big old cast bow. Plus, just looking down at the orchestra pit. They're all still standing there, kind of turned around at the stage, looking up at the stage. A big bow from our cast once again. This production of Louisa Miller is by Elijah Moshinsky, with sets and costumes by Santa Locuasto and lighting by Duane Schuler. The revival stage director is Gregory Keller. The production is a gift of Catherine and Ephraim Gilder, and the revival is a gift of Rolex. The chorus master is Donald Colombo. Musical preparation is by Donna Ratchick, John Keenan, Dan Saunders, and Brian Waghorn. The assistant stage directors are Gina Lipinski and Stephen Pickover. The prompter is Donna Ratchick. The Italian coach is Hindi Kafir. And the stage manager is Raymond Menard. The music producer for this Metropolitan Opera broadcast is Jay Sachs. And the operations director is John Kurzweil. Ed Hartley, Robert Hewitt, and Jason Crystal are the broadcast engineers. And for the quiz, Rob Gorton. And our cast is still on stage. And the audience is still on their feet.
It's a very, you know, Louisa Miller is a discovery for a lot of the audience,
really,
and they really do go wild.
Yeah. Our senior radio producer and editor is Ellen Keel, and our show producer is John Bischoff. The producer is William Berger, and the associate producer is Lee Ellen Vem. We have production assistants from Yolanda Williams, Michael Griebel, and Geza Kudlak. The broadcast stage manager is Laurie Squire. The executive producers are Nia Bongiovanni and Elena Park. The Metropolitan Opera's music director designate is Yannick Mazet-Séguin, and our cast is still on stage waving. Big hug between Sonia and Placido, and then Sonia and Piotr. Let's have one more bow, kids. And the Metropolitan Opera's general manager is Peter Geld.
Thank you, Mary Jo Heath and Ira Siff. And the Metropolitan Opera broadcast season is supported by Toll Brothers, the Annenberg Foundation, the Neubauer Family Foundation, and the Vincent A. Stabile Endowment for Broadcast Media, and broadcast here through an arrangement with the European Broadcasting Union. If you're not around for the programmes, you can listen again for 30 days in the UK online. All the details, as always, are on the Radio 3 website, where you'll find full listings of upcoming operas, and you can catch up with some too. This is BBC Radio 3. I'm Chris Berrow. Now, before Here and Now, we have a few minutes to look ahead to Monday's lunchtime concert of German Romantic Song, live from Wigmore Hall. Fiona Torkington will introduce Julius Drake on piano and the tenor Christoph Prégardien. So, in anticipation, here's Christoph and Julius with Schubert's Im Frühling.
Sitz ich an des Hügels Hang, der Himmel ist so klar, das Lüftchen spielt im grünen Tal, wo ich beim ersten Frühlingsstrahl einst auch so glücklich war, so glücklich war. Blaue Himmelsbild.
Christoph Bregardien and Julius Drake, with Schubert's Im Frühling ahead of their lunchtime concert at 1 o'clock on Monday here on BBC Radio 3.